This is KDNK News. This Wednesday, February 22nd, Basalt schools were on lockout Tuesday as federal and local law enforcement continued a manhunt for two suspects in last week's armed robbery of the Cowan Center convenience store in Carbondale. On Tuesday morning, two men who matched the description of Nicholas Amaral and his cousin Benjamin Weeks, both 19 and described as black, were spotted on a Rafta bus. Pitkin County said yesterday that officers from the Pitkin County Sheriff's, Snowmass Village PD, and Basalt Police stopped the bus near Holland Hills around 9:30 a.m., but the two males, one 5'6 and the other 6 foot, ran into the hills above the Roaring Fork Golf Club. Police have advised residents to be vigilant, lock homes and cars, and that the suspects may exit the rural area between Basalt and Old Snowmass onto Highway 82 or River Road. Carbondale Police advised Saturday that the suspects are considered armed and dangerous. The nation's highways may become more dangerous this spring. Franny Halperin and Jamie Settler of H2O Radio has more about shipping nuclear waste.
On Tuesday, the Department of Energy announced that shipments of solid nuclear waste will soon start moving along our roads to an underground repository in southern New Mexico.
The shipments were halted 3 years ago after a radiation release contaminated the facility known as WIP, for Waste Isolation Pilot Plant.
Most of the waste will come from Idaho, 61 truckloads in all, but that's just a small fraction of the 900 shipments that are supposed to be made from that state by the end of next year.
All the nuclear waste going to New Mexico is solid.
But the Department of Energy also announced last week that it's planning to ship liquid nuclear waste along highways from Canada to the Savannah River site in South Carolina.
As Mother Jones reports, there will be at least 100 to 150 separate truck shipments of liquid nuclear waste over a period of about 3 years.
Environmental groups, including the Sierra Club and Beyond Nuclear, recently sued to force the government to prepare a new environmental impact statement before starting the shipments.
But a federal judge in Washington, D.C. is allowing the shipments to go forward.
The liquid waste poses a bigger threat to the environment than solid waste if it spills into waterways or lakes.
Less than 2 ounces of the radioactive uranium could destroy a city's water supply, according to Gordon Edwards of the Canadian Coalition for Nuclear Responsibility.
If a spill contaminated the Great Lakes or any other waterway, it could be permanent. Officials will not disclose the routes of the shipments, which makes it impossible for people to take any action to prevent them. For H2O Radio, I'm Franny Halperin.
And I'm Jamie Sudler.
A news outlet publishes a story that a Republican politician dismisses as fake news. Sounds familiar, right? But in this case, there's a twist. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel is accusing State Senator Ray Scott of defamation, and the paper is threatening to sue. Legal experts said it could be the first suit of its kind, potentially setting a legal definition for what is considered fake news and what is not. Benta Perkland has more.
The dispute began with an opinion column in the newspaper supporting a bill that would give journalists and others greater access to public records. Senator Ray Scott, a Republican from Grand Junction who serves as the assistant majority leader, postponed the hearing and vote. The column urged him to move it forward. Scott took issue with that column and tweeted, quote, "We have our own fake news in Grand Junction." He declined to be interviewed for this story after talking to an attorney.
"I don't understand why the story got to where it did."
That's his colleague, Senate Majority Leader Chris Hulbert of Parker. He believes that section in the column urging for the vote was misguided.
"The premise seems to be that there's something nefarious going on with Senate Bill 40, and why hasn't a vote happened?"
But it was Scott's accusation that the column was a fake news story that raised the ire of Jay Seaton, the Sentinel's publisher.
"I'm accustomed to all kinds of criticism of what we do, and that comes with the job. I consider that word to be an attempt to undermine the speaker. That's where this bumps up against the First Amendment. When you've got a government actor who doesn't like something that he's seen, tries to diminish its credibility, then you've got real problems."
And potentially a lawsuit. Seaton says he plans to cool down for a couple of weeks, but is looking at his options for filing the suit. which is likely to put the term fake news in the spotlight. Steven Zansberg is an attorney who has represented the press in Colorado, including the Sentinel, but not in this case. He notes that the newspaper isn't alone in facing such accusations.
We are seeing a trend, not just here in Colorado, but that politicians, for a variety of reasons, have taken to calling very legitimate media entities, whether it be the New York Times, the Washington Post, or CNN, fake news. It's intended to delegitimize those sources for news.
From a legal point of view, the question isn't just whether these accusations are fair to the news outlets, but is it even a good idea for news organizations to seek vindication? George Freeman worked for more than three decades as the in-house counsel for the New York Times.
I see nothing wrong with the paper doing it. I think they're in the right to do it. I think the line has to be set that you know, people just can't call whatever they don't like fake news, and that's what he's essentially doing.
Freeman is now the executive director of the nonprofit Media Law Resource Center, which has a mission to protect freedom of the press. Though he personally supports Seaton, he says the New York Times probably would not. That newspaper has a strict policy against filing libel claims against detractors. One reason is because the press doesn't want to suppress the speech of others. There's also a larger legal reason. Freeman says bringing this type of case could ultimately backfire on the media, because legal arguments made in such cases could later be used against them.
Then the next time you're arguing that something's opinion to win your case, maybe the court will look at this case and say, no, this is similar to this case where the judge decided it's a fact.
The fight between the newspaper and the state senator is exacerbated by the fact that the bill at the heart of this dispute is something many journalists in Colorado want to see become law. The bill would make it easier for news organizations to analyze digital data through open records. The bill's Democratic sponsor, Senator John Kafalas of Fort Collins, now worries the bipartisan measure is in jeopardy.
I think it has the potential to influence how things unfold. I think it's an unfortunate side drama.
And this battle over the term fake news comes as state Republican leaders are hoping to create an open dialogue with the press to distinguish themselves from President Trump, whose fight with the media doesn't show any signs of letting up. For the first time in years, Republicans are holding multiple media briefings each week, and the GOP caucus recently hosted a reporter meet and greet. Majority Leader Holbert worries this potential lawsuit would be a setback.
There's some risk of squelching open dialogue. That's one thing that I've been trying to encourage.
For Holbert, he says the term fake news is relative and can mean something different to each person. For his part, he hopes a court battle is avoided. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
Two bills go in front of a state house committee today that citizens group Western Colorado Congress says are bad for public lands and communities that want to ban fracking. KDNK's Amy Haddon Marsh spoke with WCC organizer Emily Hornback to find out more.
House Bill 1124 wants to penalize any local government that initiates a fracking ban.
Yeah, any local government that tries to exercise either a ban or a moratorium in the state of Colorado could be penalized for the value of the mineral royalties in their municipal boundaries.
That's a lot.
Yeah. You know, it's been a very controversial issue in this state that have made its way all the way to the state Supreme Court. And, you know, last year the Supreme Court ruled that siting of oil and gas facilities is the purview of the state. You know, so I don't understand why a bill like this is even needed at the moment. There are a couple municipalities and counties, you know, Boulder County and Broomfield, they're both looking at moratoriums, but they're temporary and are there to give those governments the opportunity to update their oil and gas regulations to the ability they are able to under current state law, and they shouldn't be penalized for trying to exercise good governance over this industry. It's very clear that communities across the state, even communities in Western Colorado, believe that local governments should have some authority over the oil and gas industry, just like they do any other industry. And this bill is very counterproductive to helping us find a compromise on this issue.
Well, I thought that Western Colorado Congress was not an advocate for a ban of oil and gas drilling.
We are not. Western Colorado Congress has always worked for responsible oil and gas development in Western Colorado. However, we are an advocate for local government authority and land use planning and zoning, and that is why we oppose this bill, because we believe that local governments should have the ability to regulate oil and gas as they are allowed to under the law, and this bill is flying in the face of that conversation.
Talk about House Bill 1141. You call it the Cliven Bundy Protection Bill. What does that mean?
So this bill, you know, is very clearly inspired by some of the larger national issues that are playing out on the public stage around public lands in the West. This bill has been introduced by a Republican lawmaker from the Eastern Plains. You know, basically it would open any federal employee to criminal charges for managing range or grazing allotments on public lands. And, you know, Western Colorado Congress, we've never been opposed to public lands. We believe in responsible grazing on public lands as long as it's done in a sustainable manner. And our federal employees are critical for working on the ground with farmers and ranchers every year, every week, every month to help meet those goals and keep our public land and our public resources healthy for all of us to use. And I would just say, and this bill is basically going to penalize our federal employees for doing their job and protecting and managing our public resources for us. And it is extreme and totally unnecessary and even unconstitutional under current law.
How do you see this bill as unconstitutional?
It is very clear that public lands, whether they be Forest Service or BLM, you know, are lands of multiple use. And it's just very clear in current law, giving guidance to these agencies and governing public land management, that the authority to do this rests with these public land management agencies. And until there's an act of Congress that says otherwise, that is the law.
Emily Hornback of Western Colorado Congress, what are the chances of these bills passing committee?
Thankfully, I think they're pretty slim. You know, public sentiment in Colorado on both of these issues is, you know, is pretty clear. The folks who sit on that committee, I think, understand where Coloradans fall on these issues and will cast their votes accordingly. There are no Western Slope representatives who sit on that committee. However, you are still able to contact those folks and tell them how you feel and make sure that they're thinking about the whole state when they cast their vote.
Well, Emily Hornback, organizer for Western Colorado Congress, thanks very much for talking with me today.
Thank you so much.
House Bills 1124 and 1141 go in front of the Colorado House Committee for State Military and Veterans Affairs today.